Lecture 9, Color Vision and Pigments, Full Script Part 1. Alright, before we get into the science, I need to tell you about Wednesday. You're going to have one of the coolest lab experiences of this course. We have two hyperspectral cameras. Two. The big one, the X50, can see into the ultraviolet wavelengths your eyes literally cannot detect. Rosemary will run that at a stationary station with bird and mammal specimens from the Dickey collection. You're going to look at feathers and fur and see spectral signatures that map directly onto the pigment classes we're about to learn today. The small one, the X5, is portable. You're going to carry it into the botanical garden. Actual garden. You'll image flowers, leaves, bark, in situ, living plants, and watch the spectral curves appear in real time on a laptop screen. But I need you to bring something. One colorful object from home. Fruit, a flower, a piece of fabric, nail polish, a Skittle. I don't care what it is, but bring something you think is interesting. We're going to image it and compare it to biological specimens. And here's the preview: biological pigments and synthetic dyes have completely different spectral signatures. You'll see that difference on Wednesday. If anyone has a pet parakeet or cockatiel at home, bring a feather. Parrot feathers contain psittacofulvin pigments that fluoresce under UV. The X50 will pick that up. Your eyes won't. Okay. That's the fun. Now the science. Quick recap of Thursday. We covered the neural architecture of color vision. Opponent channels. L-M gives you the red-green axis. S-L+M gives you the blue-yellow axis. We proved to ourselves that reddish-green is impossible. It's not a failure of imagination, it's a physical constraint on a single opponent axis. We saw the Fong et al. Paper from 2025, the US system that can target individual cones with a laser and create a color, OLO, that no human has ever seen in natural light. We did the Adelson checkerboard. We did the dress. Today we finished the receiver side. Color blindness, tetrachromacy, the umwelt. And then we pivot. We flip the question. Instead of how do you detect color, we ask where does color come from in the first place? The answer is pigments. That's the second half of today. But first, let's play a game. Turn to your neighbor. Imagine you can add exactly one new visual ability tonight. You go to sleep, you wake up, and one of these four things is now true about you. Option 1, you can see UV nectar guides on flowers. Option 2, you can see the polarization of light. Option 3, you become a functional tetrachromat, for cone classes, a whole new dimension of color. Option 4, you lose all color, you become a dichromat, but you gain the ability to break camouflage that trichromats can't. Now, which one would help you most as a bee? As a hunter? As someone trying to attract a mate? As an artist? There's no right answer because sensory systems are not better or worse in the abstract. They are tuned to ecological jobs. And that's the last idea from the receiver side that I want you to hold. Every visual system is a solution to a particular ecological problem. Different species face different problems. They build different solutions. Now let's see why some humans have a different solution from others. Remember from Lecture 5, Old World Primates, that's us, plus all the apes and Old World monkeys, regained trichromacy about 30 to 40 million years ago by duplicating a single cone opsin gene. That gene duplication landed on the X chromosome. And the two copies, the L and M opsin genes, sit right next to each other on XQ28, tandem duplicates. They are 96% identical at the amino acid level. That is an insane amount of similarity for two genes sitting right next to each other. And what happens when two nearly identical DNA sequences sit side by side during meiosis? They misalign. Unequal crossing over. Hybrid genes. Deletions. Extra copies. All at an elevated rate compared to most loci in the genome. Now here's the sex linkage problem. Males have one X. One copy of each gene. If that one copy is a hybrid or a deletion, that's it. You're color deficient. About 8% of males of European descent. Females have two X chromosomes. Both copies would have to be affected for the phenotype to express. Hardy-Weinberg, if Q is 0.08, then Q squared is 0.0064, about 0.5%. And that's very close to the observed female rate. But here's the thing. 8% is not a universal number. It's a European number. Look at this table. The rate drops as you move away from populations with long agricultural histories. East Asia, 4-6%. Sub-Saharan Africa, 2-4%. Indigenous Australians and Arctic Inuit, populations with zero history of agriculture, are at 1-2%. 3 hypotheses. Post's relaxed selection model. Farming reduces the fitness cost of poor color discrimination because you're not hunting for food by color anymore, so deleterious alleles accumulate by drift. Morgan's dichromat advantage. Dichromats are actually better at breaking certain kinds of camouflage, so mixed groups of hunters do better. And heterozygote advantage. Carrier females may have enhanced color discrimination from having 4 cone classes. None proven. All may be partially right. Now here's the slide that should bother you. Your naive prediction would be monochrome environments, snow, desert, should have relaxed selection. So CDD rates should be high. Right? Wrong. Inuit and Aboriginal Australians live in some of the most spectrally uniform environments on Earth, and they have the lowest CDD rates of any populations tested. Why? Blood on snow. A red trail on a white field. A dichromat misses it. Ptarmigan on lichen. A goanna on red sand. Thin ice versus thick ice, the blue shadow difference. In monochrome environments, small chromatic deviations carry life or death information. The signal-to-noise ratio for color cues is actually highest when the background is uniform. Selection on color discrimination is intense, not relaxed. The variable that predicts CDD rates is not environmental colorfulness. It is the duration of agriculture. 10,000 years of farming in Europe, high CDD. 0 years in traditional Inuit and Aboriginal societies, low CDD. Post's model works, but only when you measure the right variable. Now flip the coin upside down. If CDD carriers have a fourth opsin variant, and we know they do, via X inactivation, then maybe some of those carriers aren't just normal. Maybe some of them can see more. Hold on. Having 4 cone classes is necessary but not sufficient. You also need the neural wiring to treat them as separate channels. Hardware without software. Jordan and colleagues tested 24 women who were heterozygous for spectrally distinct L-opsin alleles. 23 out of 24 behaved as perfectly normal trichromats. The fourth cone class was there in the retina, but the brain averaged it into the existing L channel. No new perceptual dimension. One subject, CDA29, could discriminate stimuli that collapsed to the same point in any trichromat's color space. She had genuinely wired a fourth opponent channel. Functional tetrachromacy. And then there's Conchetta Antico. An Australian-American artist who was confirmed as a functional tetrachromat through Jordan's behavioral testing. When she looks at grass, she sees, and I'm quoting, pinks and purples and oranges and blues woven into the green. When she looks at shadows, she says, they're not gray, they're every other color. Her paintings contain color distinctions that are metameric for trichromats. Different pigments that look identical to you and me, but that Antico perceives as genuinely different colors. Hardware, for cone classes, plus software, a fourth neural channel, equals a genuinely different color space. She inhabits a different visual world from you. Same stimulus, different perception. Same flower, different experience. And here's the molecular evidence. This is Sanger's sequencing of her L-opsin gene. See the K at position 230? That's IUPAC code for G over T heterozygosity. 2 different alleles at a spectral tuning site. Via X inactivation, different cones express different versions. For cone classes, 1 retina. The Schwab lesson from Lecture 6 lands here again. Photoreceptors are necessary but not sufficient. Perception depends on the wiring. Jacob von Uexküll, 1934. Every organism inhabits its own Umwelt, a sensory world defined by what its receptors can detect and what its nervous system can process. This flower. To you, it's yellow. Uniform. Uninteresting. To a bee, it has a dark UV nectar guide bullseye pointing straight to the reward. Same stimulus. Different umwelt. Color is not a property of light. It is not a property of the object. It is the output of a specific computational system given specific physical inputs. Change the receiver, change the color. That's the deepest message of the vision block. Let me show you where we've been. Lecture 5, Molecule Level. A photon hits retinal, retinal isomerizes, the opsin fires. Lecture 6, Organ Level. How do you build an eye from a simple photosensitive patch? Nielsen-Pelger, Co-option, Physics. Lecture 7, Evolution and Circuit. How did our specific eye get the way it is? How do opponent channels compute color? Lecture 9, First Half, Umwelt. What does color mean to different species? And now we flip. Not how do you detect color, but where does color come from in the first place? Pigments.